But what I think happened, they come back to that house. He was getting served the divorce papers. He'd been drunk for months. And him and Chubb was fussing. And Chubb had about all of it he could take. Chubb was mean. When they go in the house, I think E.C. got that pistol out of the van. And I think he shot Chubb in the shoulder. E.C. shot Chubb in the shoulder. And I think Chubb took that pistol away from him, beat him to death, and then shot him. Chubb always carried a 25, a little 25 pistol. Then he made up the story where he shot through those glass doors at the getaway men.
Well, the story that Chubb said when he was questioned about this, that he was actually upstairs.
That didn't plan out. I'm telling you what I think happened.
So I'm just relating what Chubb said.
Yeah, that's what he said.
Right. He said he was upstairs drawing bathwater, and then he said he heard gunshots downstairs.
Yeah.
But we should also point out, here's his multi-million-dollar ranch, and the phone service had been cut out to the ranch because they couldn't pay the phone bill.
Wouldn't pay it.
Or wouldn't pay it. There was a dispute about it. So if you had to call from there, you had to drive, what, 7 miles or so to get to a phone. Then Chubb says, I go downstairs, and he was looking over EC, and that's when he says he got shot in the shoulder.
Yeah.
And you believe that shot actually came from EC.
Yeah.
And then when he turned, he says he saw two intruders run out the glass doors, and he shot at them, and of course didn't hit anybody.
Yeah.
I guess the question would be that if they were there to shoot EC, why wouldn't they shoot Chubb as well?
We'd dry run that again, just like Chubb said it happened. It didn't work that way. You couldn't hear that bathwater running upstairs. You couldn't hear the shot down there.
So you recreated that scene.
Yeah.
You had somebody standing up there drawing water and then shot downstairs.
Yeah.
A deputy, I suppose, upstairs could not hear the shot.
That's right. We'd dry run it time and time again. That didn't happen.
So you probably did that 4 or 5 times to make sure that
you
couldn't hear it.
It was a case, if everything would went right, been worked before daylight.
You would have had it solved before daylight?
Yes. If the body hadn't have been moved, they hadn't have cleaned up the body, it had been worked before daylight.
How would you have tied Chubb to it?
Just like I'm saying here, when you got a murder, you just got two people there. One of them's dead, and one of them don't talk, you got a problem. We had to prove what he was telling us didn't jive with what happened.
So that part, the upstairs water and the shot downstairs, you could prove. What else could you prove?
I think Chubb had a 50-50 shot of being found innocent because E.C. didn't have too good a record, you know.
Tell us what that meant.
Well, lots of people didn't like him. He had trouble with a lot of people.
And he was in financial trouble.
He was in financial trouble, and you could line that wall 3 times up and down there. People had a reason to kill him. We had to eliminate all them people because he either owed them or something. E.C. and I got along great. I never had any problems with him. I had a problem with him, but it was over a deputy. You know, he didn't like her or something.
His neighbors all hated him that I talked to.
He had all these thugs hanging around him. And he was dealing with all of them. I had a district attorney. He was a new district attorney. And he's a fine fella. But he wasn't a prosecutor. He believed everything everybody told him. He's a newsman's dream. He didn't help matters any. He wanted to get the mafia in right off. Well, it wasn't a mafia deal.
I was going to ask you that. Do you think, everybody said, maybe the mafia thugs were hanging around him?
No, it wasn't a mafia. Meekum, his brother-in-law.
John Meekum from New Orleans.
John Meekum. They were in financial trouble at the same time. See, they lost half of their assets over in Iran or somewhere over there in one of those countries. Just took half what they had overnight. That happened just a little while before. But Meekum, little John, took EC and went to New York and tried to talk to the mafia that wanted $15 million. The mafia wanted to cut off the top. And made E.C. mad, he wouldn't do it. And John says, E.C., I'm not going to try to help you anymore. You get the money here, just get it and get out here and get taken care of.
So the mafia says, if we get you the money, we're going to take some money off the top of that as a service for getting it for you.
Yeah.
And he said no.
Yeah. And he got up mad and stomped out. John says, I told him I'd never try to help him again. Now, that's what the mafia had to do with it. These people are hanging around him here. They were just stealing what they could steal. Everybody around him was stealing.
Stealing cattle, maybe?
Stealing cattle, stealing feed, stealing whatever's loose. I'm going back further. Oh, 6 months, probably, before this happened, E.C. called me up there. So I was up there at daylight, and he had a boy, number four. I don't know, he's a small kid. E.C. says, number four, come go with us. Said, I'm going to take the sheriff up here and show him some cattle. Said, I'm going to drop you off up there where they're loading them hogs. They was loading hogs. The trucks was there. He said, number four, you get out here and get a count on them hogs. Four gets out, and we go on up there. Coming back, I said, E.C., why don't you run off all these people you got working for you? Hire your foreman. Let him run this. I said, you can't run all this deal. He said, Sheriff, I don't want anybody up here and think. I said, all I want the guys, if I put out there digging a corner hole this morning, I want him digging when I get back. He had that kind of attitude. And he was sober. Now, he didn't stay sober long, but he was sober. When I got up there, everything was fine. I was up there probably 2 hours before. He said, oh, let's go over to the house. And we go over there to the house. Of course, he had this maid there. He said, fix us a drink. We went in there in his office and sat down. He had 3 or 4 cases of whiskey stacked up over here. I said, I don't want any. So she comes back with that glass full of scotch and water, Chivas and water. He drank that, and we talked and visited. Every little bit, the phone would ring or somebody would ring the doorbell. And while we were sitting there, he made an appointment to meet a fellow at the Holiday Inn in Oklahoma City next morning at 4 o'clock. There wasn't a lazy bone in that boy's body. And everybody wants to give him hell for everything. But he'd done a good job on a lot of things there at that ranch. He'd done a lot of things to those cowboys. He improved their homes and had 2 caterpillars running 24 hours a day. Good thing, but it cost money. Everything he was doing was going out and nothing coming in. The press and a lot of other people, it wasn't all that bad a shape. He was in debt big, but he owned a lot.
Didn't he run through about $10 million worth of money?
Well, I imagine. But it was going out.
Yep.
And them women flying to Dallas every week to get their hair fixed. That all cost money. In the last years of his operation, he operated out of his hip pocket.
Out of his hip pocket?
Yeah.
He didn't keep any records?
No. And I said, E.C., get you a good bookkeeper, get you a foreman. But he finally did it. He finally hired him a foreman and a bookkeeper. But it was too late. It was just mismanagement, and he was on that booze, and the bankers was all scared of him.
Why would a banker be afraid of him?
They didn't know what he had.
Meaning?
Back them days, banking was different than it is today. You went to the bank in those days, you had a financial statement. Present that and you get the money if it qualifies you. It's hard to beat a bank today. They know more about you than you know about yourself.
So they couldn't trust him if he came with a financial statement?
That's right, they couldn't trust him. He was stealing his own cattle.
He was stealing his own cattle.
Well, and he was selling his cattle. I call it stealing. He was selling his own cattle and wasn't turning it in. So everything he did was wrong.
Well, he ran the ranch for 10 years. I mean, at the beginning, he was doing all right, you think?
No. He never wanted for money in his life. And they turned that ranch over to him too young.
He was 22 years old.
22 years old. And wilder than a deer. Just give him too much power, too much money, too much. And the old man encouraged it. I went to a deal down at John Zink's Boy Scout. John Zink was putting on a feed out there for a bunch of people. Not always, but most of the time I was invited. I'd go down there and they had all the ranchers in the county. And they was talking about selling the Chapman Barnard.
The Chapman Barnard Ranch.
Yeah. The land was in bad shape. Cattle was cheap and land was cheap. The main thing I thought most ranchers fought it was because they had that thing sold and the ranchers thought it was too cheap. They owed more on their land than they was going to sell that for. And that's the reason they didn't want to sell it. I don't know if that's just my thinking. They didn't want it to sell. But Gene, old Gene, gets up and says, "My son controls more land than any one man in Osage County." Now, I thought that was the devil place for a man to get up and make that statement. That was just me thinking, and I don't think I was the only one. And Gene was always good to me. I bought bucking horses off of him, and never was treated any nicer in anybody's home than it was theirs.
But as time went on, didn't Gene and Kathleen see the way E.C. was mismanaging the ranch?
In my opinion, this is just my opinion, I think they kept it from him as long as they could.
Kept it from Gene?
Yeah. Gene was cranky. He couldn't see. Kept an old loaded pistol right there beside his chair. He recognized people by their voice. He was in bad shape. I think they kept it from him as long as they could.
Well, George, him a-clearing them trees with them bulldozers was a good thing to do.
Yeah, but he didn't have any money. I said, everything he did for that ranch, he improved it. He'd done a great job of doing that, but he didn't have any money, spending more money than he was bringing in.
Right.
Yeah, I always gave him credit for doing what was good for the ranch. But Gene there would put running water in them cowboys' house. E.C. did, made them modern. But the cowboys stealing off of him at the same time.
Let's bring you back to the scene of when it happened and Chubb says he was shot in his shoulder. Does he then run off to seek medical help?
Yes.
So then Chubb ends up in the same hospital where E.C. is.
Yeah.
I read accounts where Chubb almost was delirious and talking about mafia and all that kind of thing. According to your theory, then, if Chubb was the one, he was already trying to put people off the trail that were pointed at him.
Now, I never could get this out of the nurse, but the nurse was supposed to have heard Chubb say, "E, don't tell him what I did to you."
Who is E?
E.C.
He was just talking out loud. E.C., don't tell him what I did to you.
Yeah. They had them both right there for a while. When I got there, Chubb was in the room.
How did that come to you?
This nurse was supposed to have told somebody else, but I couldn't get it out of her.
She wouldn't repeat it to you?
No. But another employee there in the hospital thought he heard her say that Chubb said that to E.C., don't tell him what I did to you.
Chubb apparently was standing, you feel, when he was shot in the head.
No. He was beat to death. He was on the floor, up against that couch. I think Chubb just shorted out and beat him to death. When he seen what he'd done, he just pulled him up there, put that pistol right up there between his eyes and pulled the trigger.
Chubb's story in saying that two men took off, then a couple of rangers, I guess the next morning, they said there was only one set of footprints at the scene in the dew of the grass.
When I got back out there from the hospital, there was a big dew on the ground that night. The only footprints was around there was leaving E.C.'s house, went over Dale Court's house, that's the foreman, left his house and went over to the Cadillac automobile sitting out in front of the old man's house there. And from it, crossed back over to E.C.'s house. That was the only footprints around there. I asked Chubb one time when I was interviewing him, I said, "Why did you go to Dale's house? Then go back to that Cadillac. I don't know why he went over to that Cadillac." He wouldn't answer me.
Why do you think he did?
I don't know.
Is it true there was a signed commitment to approve a $12 million loan that was found in E.C.'s clothing?
That's bogus.
It was bogus?
Yeah.
He had $999 in cash in his pants.
Yeah.
Six groups of lacerations, they say, in E.C.'s head. Some say they were inflicted with a knife or broken bottle, but you say it was
a pistol.
Was it true that a deputy found a bone fragment stuck to the brim of Chubb Henderson's hat?
Yes.
Tell us about that.
Well, that's another mistake was made. This deputy, and he found this bone fragment on Chubb's hat. Somewhere, somehow, that fragment fell off. From E.C.'s house to the sheriff's office, that bone fragment fell off. And it's pretty good size. It's as big as your little finger.
So that would have been a bone fragment from
E.C.'s head.
What I read, the deputy put it on his desk, and when he returned, the fragment was gone.
Well, I don't know about that. The way I always put it was lost somewhere between the scene and the time it got into the property room.
The murder weapon never found?
Never found.
Never found.
No.
So if Chubb did this, how he could have gotten rid of that weapon so fast, or when he left the ranch on his way to the hospital?
I thought Chubb knew where the weapon was. But all of us that worked on it, we discussed it. And the theory was he threw it in the creek or something going into the hospital. But I always felt like Chubb kept that gun. He was nutty over guns. And I just felt like he had it hid somewhere.
He was a good-looking guy, wasn't he?
Oh, yeah.
There was some talk that Chubb and Linda had some interest in each other.
I hardly believe that.
Okay.
I don't think he was fancy enough for Linda.
He may be physically, but not his background. I mean, he was arrested for the largest marijuana bust in the state, 17 years on the run, living in Montana under an assumed name, working as a subcontractor for Ted Turner, building buffalo pens.
I thought we had a shot to find that pistol when they caught him with that marijuana. I thought we might find it. There were some guns there, but it wasn't in.
Yeah.